podcast is part of the Cannabis Media Collective. To enjoy all of the podcasts within the collective, just go to your favorite streaming app or site and subscribe to the Cannabis Media Collective. For more info, check out distinctmedia.ca.
Welcome to The Dopest. I'm your host, Nicole Hodges. Each week, I'm bringing a new guest to dissect the world of cannabis. Today's episode, why scientists should all do drugs. What a dream it would be to rejuvenate the brain so that everybody gets 5 to 10 more years without needing extra care, or to accept that healing from addiction or PTSD comes in many forms, or maybe that plant medicine's efficacy is worth taking more seriously. Today, I have Michelle Ross, a neuroscientist who has helped thousands of patients with chronic pain, anxiety, and depression live their best life through cannabis, mushrooms, and mindset work, three things that I really do enjoy myself. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, thank you for talking to me. One of the things you and I had talked about early on during a preliminary call, which made me just absolutely fall in love with you, was essentially you saying, make the scientists do the drugs. Can you elaborate on this point for our listeners?
Well, it's sort of funny. So from my personal experience, I grew up thinking that all drugs, including cannabis, magic mushrooms, MDMA, any illegal drug was actually a really bad drug. And I had this stigma against drug users, right? These were people that were breaking the law, and then they were using drugs that had harmful impacts to their brain and hurting their families, hurting themselves, like not being productive at work. I just, you know, basically carried on all the stigma from the war on drugs. And my DARE training and all that. And it was sort of funny. I studied these drugs and I understood the mechanism, how they worked on the brain and everything, but I didn't quite understand any of these drugs until I took them myself. And so it's sort of funny. One of the things I'm famous about is actually being a scientist who used DMT and did a YouTube video on it. So I have this video that's been viewed by like 2.7 million people. And I was interviewed by a woman called Amber Lyon. She created a website called reset.me. And she did this interview and she asked me about my first time using DMT and what that experience was like. And for me, it was something that really shifted my perspective on what these drugs are, how they could actually be used as tools for spirituality, how there is a difference between using drugs and abusing them. And not all use is abuse. And really, it really opened my eyes to who are drug users. And do we have compassion to drug users? Is drug use okay? Like basically using drugs really shaped how I saw drug policy. And I actually moved much more from doing research that criminalized drug use or really was focused on treating addicts to really focusing more on work of how to use these psychedelic substances to heal people, as well as how to change the laws around drug use to really go from a criminalization approach to a harm reduction approach. So for me, I really think that if any scientist that studies drugs hasn't tried drugs, please try them. Not because you're going to be like, wow, drugs are great, I'm just going to leave my field, but because I think that you just don't quite understand what you're working with and you don't understand the people that are using drugs until you use them yourself. Please do the research yourself. Please be a guinea pig. But it's such a controversial thing. I mean, the government doesn't want the scientists doing drugs. I mean, like if you're ever caught doing drugs and, and you study drugs for a living, you basically your career is over. So, it's a very controversial thing I'm saying. A lot of scientists were like, you're not objective. You use drugs and you study them. But I really think that it should be the other way around. You should know inside and out what you're dedicating your life to researching.
Yeah. And I love that you use the word spirituality, because I think that sometimes there's this misconception that scientists are, hard ass. And I think it's important to get the data and to do the research. But to hear you associate the importance of this spiritual aspect of using these substances is incredibly important.
It's sort of funny. I started off very religious as a child. I was raised Catholic. I went to a Catholic college, a Boston College. And then the more I really dived into science, I actually became an atheist. And then it wasn't until after I finished my PhD in neuroscience, I had moved out to California, where, of course, there's a very thriving psychedelic community out here, and had experimented with some of the psychedelics, that I actually switched from being agnostic and having these very spiritual experiences. Some of them had some archetypes from traditional religion, right? Like I saw like the Last Suppers, like there's like little elements of religion that I was, you know, used to, you know, even like Buddha type of imagery and things like that. But then also was very much connected with a spirituality and a sense of being part of the universe and part of something bigger that was not based in any type of religion that I had experienced before, but is very interesting. If you take psychedelics and you talk to psychedelic communities, there's a lot of themes and visions that are very similar between these experiences. And for me personally, it just really gave me the sense that I am important, you know, I'm part of something bigger, and that there is something else there. Like there isn't just nothing, you know. Atheism wasn't for me after that. So it was very interesting. Like my entire perspective on life shifted after using psychedelics. So mm-hmm. I think, again, it's very much an important thing. And I'm actually happy that I did it later in life, right? A lot of, I would say, teenagers or young people use psychedelics very early. I obviously didn't use them until after I was 30. But I feel like I had really matured. My brain had matured. You know, I had some life experiences under my belt. So using psychedelics, I think, later in life really does reframe who you are, where you are in this world, and can give you sort of like the support network and grounding that you need. And sort of interesting, like some of the authors out there, like Michael Pollan has a very, very famous book out now, and he talks about, you know, older people using psychedelics. And not like I'm that old. I mean, when we were talking about 30, I'm 37 now. But still, it's sort of later in life. Traditionally, people think about people experimenting with drugs for whatever the reasons is usually something you do when you're younger. But it's very interesting that I'm now part of this cohort of people that are now rediscovering psychedelics, you know, later in life. And I think that is definitely been a pivotal moment in my life.
Wow. I mean, our stories are very similar. I didn't try psychedelics until a couple of years ago. I'm 29, and I didn't actually try smoking cannabis for the first time until a few years ago as well. I grew up with massive stigmas around, you know, what this was. I saw my mom doing it, and I had kind of at 15 decided that anything my mom would do, I would do the opposite if I was to be happy one day. So just like total irrational basis for me shunning this whole side. But I guess on the flip side of that, I navigated life and I kind of learned a little bit more about self-awareness, and I studied some philosophy. And then finally I tried these things. And I think for me, it was like this awareness into all of life is absurd. And it's, to me, the revelation was that it's meaningless unless you give it meaning. And that, that was absolute freedom. But again, like coming a little later on. So And I think, you know, if we're going to be talking about, you know, some mental health things as well, that hopelessness that some can feel when they kind of fall into this pit of despair for whatever reason it is, and how something like psychedelics and cannabis can bring you out of that or rejuvenate you. So in particular, at that crossroads between cannabis and mental health, like, is there anything that you've learned that you've personally found fascinating?
Oh my goodness. I could talk on and on about cannabis for mental health. And in fact, I'm working on a book on it right now. But there's so many misconceptions about that. And it's sort of funny because I actually started my work as a neuroscientist studying drug addiction and studying ways that we might be more vulnerable to drug addiction, or the negative impact of using drugs as a young person. And it's sort of funny. I was actually surrounded by a lot of the propaganda research, I have to say, but like in air quotes, that was suggesting that when you use cannabis as a teenager, it could spur schizophrenia later in life. And so for me personally, I was really scared of using cannabis. I didn't use cannabis until I was in my late 20s. And it was because there's mental health issues in my family. So here I am surrounded by all these like prestigious researchers that are saying cannabis use causes schizophrenia. And I'm like, okay, well, I will not ever smoke a joint until I'm past this window of when you get schizophrenia. And so you're like, basically, it's almost like 99% chance that if you're going to have schizophrenia, that'll be the onset of it's going to be before you're 30. So it's like, once you hit a certain age, it's like unlikely like that you would be going to develop schizophrenia. And so I literally waited until that period was over to try cannabis because I was like, oh no, I don't want to become crazy earlier. And like, that was the research. Mm-hmm. So basically, just to make clear for your audience, cannabis does not cause schizophrenia. What the actual research is that if you were going to get come down with schizophrenia, you had the genes and everything for it. If you use cannabis, the onset might be earlier. So if you were going to get it, you know, in your genes, it says at 26, you would have developed schizophrenia. If you smoked cannabis when you're 13, you might get it at 25 or 24 instead. So like, it won't cause you to have schizophrenia if you're not supposed to. But like, this was in the back of my head that, you know, that psychedelics like cannabis, you know, were basically causing mental health issues. And it's sort of interesting. It's like, once I actually started to consume cannabis, you know, I realized how much stigma even myself had held. Like, I knew things about cannabis. Like, I knew how the endocannabinoid system worked. I knew how it could rebalance the brain. And yet I still had the stigma of, okay, you know, if you smoke too much, you can either be psychotic or you be lazy or you're going to have the munchies, like all these silly little stigmas and things like that, that I thought the plant did. And then when I was using it, I realized I was like, no, actually it makes me less anxious, makes me less depressed. It makes me more focused, makes me clear. It helps me be creative. Oh, I could write books on this. You know, it's sort of funny. It's like literally you grow up and you work in this drug addiction industry. I was literally like sort of brainwashed into, yes, drug users are lazy, unproductive, unfocused, and have like long lasting brain damage. And, you know, of course, now that we've done the research, you know, in the last 5 to 10 years, we know all these things are untrue. A lot of this was like paid government propaganda studies that were not done right that showed that these things about cannabis use and psychedelics use and brain damage, we know that that's not true. But to me, I'd internalized a lot of this stuff. So for me, you know, using cannabis and understanding that it had all these benefits was not only like, wow, this is as crazy as knowing like Santa's not real. Like everything I've been taught is actually wrong. What else is this plant like hiding? Well, like, what are these secrets? It's sort of funny. It was like literally like having been a drug addiction scientist that is now using cannabis. It was literally like uncovering this like conspiracy. Like I know firsthand of like, the government doesn't fund this research. They fund other research. They're, you know, other countries are coming up with studies that are completely false because I can read the, you know, the science. I can read the raw data and I can see things that the general public doesn't have access to. And it was like, literally, I was like, they're hiding stuff. Like they are hiding things. And so for me, it just made me go, I want to learn more. I want to learn more. And I realized that if I wanted to learn more, I was going to have to teach myself. And so when I moved out to California and I was surrounded by the cannabis industry, it was like, well, I think my education is actually outside this box. Like it's not going to be found in, you know, the colleges and academia. It's really going to be found by the caregivers, patients, the people that make these products. And I did actually a lot of cannabis health coaching. I started working with patients and trying to figure out what strains are right for them. Is there a strain that can help you with your anxiety? Is there a strain that makes your anxiety worse? And really just starting to collect data on how to use this plant for the right reasons, not just getting high. Because I mean, yes, there's a time and a place to get high, but there's really a way to powerfully use this plant to help restore brain balance. And I think that as somebody who studied, I actually worked in a department of molecular psychiatry. So like my job was to study the effects of drugs on the brain, whether they were legal drugs like Prozac or Adderall, or illegal drugs like cannabis or heroin. And so I've really been able to see like side by side, like pharmaceuticals for depression versus natural substances for depression. And
well, yeah. And what are you finding like when you see these things side by side?
One that I think a lot of the mental health drugs that we put people on, people don't realize how addictive they are or how hard it is to get off of them. For example, Xanax, right? No one thinks that Xanax is a horribly addictive substance, but then you see these people that have been on it for, you know, 10 years or, you know, they were prescribed as teenagers and now they're 40 and like trying to get off of these substances. And it is so difficult for them to get off them. We see people that don't want to be on these prescriptions anymore. They have horrible side effects. You know, they decrease, you know, libido or sexual drive. They make it harder to orgasm. They cause diarrhea or nausea or headaches or things like that. They have a horrible, you know, laundry list of side effects. And then we see people that either have started off on cannabis or they've, you know, successfully weaned themselves off of these antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs and onto cannabis. And what we see is that there's really not this laundry list of side effects that's with cannabis, right? you know, you don't have nausea. Cannabis actually helps with nausea. You don't have migraines as a side effect. Cannabis helps with migraines. You don't have appetite loss. You don't have sexual drive loss because, again, cannabis is great for sex, helps with orgasms, helps with increasing motivation for sex. So,
okay, like, all the things. I have to, like, put a pin in that for a second because hearing that from someone in your position, I think, is so important for so many women. You know, like, we're having these debates back and forth, and, you know, like, I've written a few articles where I've been talking about personal experiences with increased pleasure and orgasms and talking to women. And we just did a whole series talking to women about pleasure and the intersection of cannabis and orgasms. And it's like, you still have to be so careful and tiptoe around making any statements, but hearing it from you is so crucial.
Okay, so I want to give you guys a little insight into my life. So it's sort of funny. So I actually did a lot of rodent research, right? So when I did a drug addiction research, this was, you know, having like mice or rats in little boxes with levers and they're pressing for drugs or for food or for other things. I was in this whole lab where they're doing a lot of rat research. And so one of my fellow students who was working on her PhD at the same time I was in the department, she was like the Dr. Ruth of our department. She was actually studying Prozac and all the different types of antidepressants and how they impact sexual function. So she, like, literally her job was to give mice antidepressants and then watch like how many times they have sex, like approach or trying to find a partner. And so it was just like literally for 7 years, that's all she did was watch my sex. And she was like, antidepressants are the worst. She was literally the only person, I think, in the United States studying the sexual effects of antidepressants in female mice. Because most of these studies, right, if they approve a drug and they put it on the market, they're studying it in male mice, male rats. They don't like to study female mice and female rats because they have a cycle and that impacts, you know, causes variability in the data that we have. Like, in the male mice are the same, their hormones aren't fluctuating, and they're just, they have the same behavior all the time. They're much easier to study. And so they usually don't do female mice. Yet, when we look at antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs, they're mostly prescribed to women. So here we have something that is tested on men and given to women. And so when we say things like antidepressants, like, they make me feel like crap. Like, I don't want to have sex. And, you know, our doctor writes us off as saying, like, whatever, well, at least you're not trying to kill yourself. You know, you need these pills. I'm sorry, but sex is a huge part of our life. And so if we can find something that actually helps, like, maintain your interest in the things that make life worth living. And for me, I mean, personally, if I had no sex drive, I wouldn't even know who I am, because that's such a huge part of who I am. I feel like sex is something that is so overlooked for women. And for me, with my focus, I focus really on empowering women to live their best lives, you know, emotionally, physically, spiritually, et cetera, with cannabis. And it really makes a huge difference. When you see women with depression that are on antidepressants and you see them after they're on cannabis, I mean, again, like, most of them are like, that's the big thing. It's like, it's so taboo to talk about. But again, if you have restored sexual function, you are going to start living.
Yeah, well-fucked women change the world.
Amen.
Why is cannabinoid medicine so important for women's health in particular? You're kind of talking about, you know, sexuality in particular, and I know that's so holistic for our creativity and the ways in which we move through the world and the vibrancies and the ways that we express ourselves. So in terms of mental health for women, why is this a focus and a passion of yours?
So one, again, we have a lot of antidepressants on the market that don't even work. So I think the statistics, at least in the United States, is that 25% of depression cases are treatment resistant. And so that means that no prescription on the market works. So imagine if you have a disease, and this is a potentially fatal disease, right? People die from depression, PTSD, I mean, and suicide. And so if you have patients that you literally have no options for, I mean, that's not acceptable. Depression and suicide is actually a leading cause of death in the United States and other countries. And so it's really important for us to treat mental health and really get women the treatment that they deserve. And I think that cannabis, it does so many different things to the brain, right? And so we have different cannabinoids in cannabis. We have THC, we have CBD, we have these minor cannabinoids like CBG and CBD. That we're just learning about and their potential roles in pathways in the brain. But we do know, for example, that CBD is really interesting in the fact that it binds directly to serotonin receptors. And so you have these receptors called 5-HT1A, 5-HT2A, and they are really what's regulating things like sleep and mood and eating and fucking. It's all the like the four F's. It's sort of funny. We in science world we're supposed to say mating, but you already dropped the F bomb, so we're good here. But serotonin is really important, right? If you don't have enough serotonin, or if you have too much, like everything's messed up. So you want enough to eat, but like not be, you know, overweight. You want enough to be interested in sex, but not be, you know, like a sex maniac, like all those things, right? You want to sleep, but not sleep all day. So like normal levels are really important. In depression, we don't have enough serotonin function. And that's why drugs like Prozac increase serotonin activity. We still don't even know how some of these drugs work. It's hilarious that there are drugs on the market that we don't know how exactly how they work. We're just like, they're for depression. Here, take them. But we think that they might have something to do with the serotonin system. But we know that CBD is acting basically like some antidepressants. And so that's why it's really, really a great way for women to use plant medicine naturally, rather than taking a pill that is unfortunately causing problems, you know, across their system and their digestive tract and things like that. The reason why a lot of antidepressants actually have a lot of negative impacts on our GI tract, right? It's like nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, or like actual real side effects of antidepressants. It's because most of our serotonin system is actually in our gut. We call our gut our second brain. So if you're taking drugs that impact the gut, right, you're going to have these nasty side effects. So it's weird because cannabis actually heals our gut. So that's like really nice. Whether it's CBD, whether it's THC, we have these cannabinoid receptors in our gut. And we find that people, no matter what they're taking cannabis for, even if it's not for mental health issues, they seem to heal their gut. It's really good for Crohn's disease and almost any disease like IBS where there's gut issues. So if you can heal your gut, you end up healing the brain and vice versa. So it's really interesting. So it's like cannabis is actually the thing that not only doesn't cause side effects, but it seems to be healing the effects of even some of the side effects of drugs that people have taken in the past.
Damn.
There's so much I could share. I could be like talking all day.
Easily. There's so many things. My brain is going in so many directions. I just want to ask this and this and this. And But one of the things that I think is really key to zero in on is, what is healing as you've come to understand it?
So healing, I think that is such a, you know, a heavy word right there, right? So if you're a traditional doctor, right, you know, you're just looking at a patient from, you know, their test scores, right? Okay. On a scale of 0 to 10, you know, how much pain are you in, or how sad do you feel today? Or how many times, you know, did you want to kill yourself today? Like really healing for a traditional doctor would be like, okay, we got them from a 7 in suicide, you know, to like a lower score. They're not as suicidal today. Like that's healing for them. For me, healing is not just about the physical. It's not the mental. It's not just spiritual. It's really everything. I mean, we are very complex as humans. And for us, you know, our mind, body, soul is connected. And so you can have somebody with the right brain chemistry, but if they haven't, you know, worked on their emotional baggage or their boundaries or some other emotional health, you're not going to heal the person, because that stuff is going to be expressed in physical pain, whether it's their hip hurting, whether it's migraines, whatever, it's going to come out. If you haven't worked on somebody's spiritual health, right? They don't know, you know, their place in the world. They don't know why they're here. They feel lost, right? They don't feel connected. They're also going to suffer either physical or emotional health issues. And so I think it's really important for us to teach people how to heal themselves, how to know themselves, how to listen to themselves, and, you know, how to support themselves. I think that modern medicine is not really healing anyone. Modern medicine creates customers. So it basically says, diagnoses you, puts a label on you and says, this is what's wrong with you. I'm the doctor God. I have an answer. Here's the medicine. Take my medicine for life. You don't like that medicine, I've got more expensive medicine for you to take. But they really neglect all these facets of humanity that are so important. Again, our emotional health, you know, or spiritual health, we should really not have to go to like 20 different specialists to get all the healing that we need, right? We shouldn't have to say, okay, I'm going to go to a pastor and a psychiatrist and an internist and an OBGYN. Like, it's like hilarious. Like, what I love about cannabis is that really this plant helps facilitate you as a healer. So one, you get to choose what type of journey you're going on, what type of healing method you're going on. And so for cannabis, you know, there's obviously the medical aspects of it when we're talking about like, oh, I'm going to take some lotions and tinctures or edibles and I'm going to reduce my pain or I'm going to reduce my anxiety, depression. But there's also the spiritual component and the emotional component. And cannabis actually helps activate receptors in different brain regions that help us deal with memory. And so part of the emotional baggage that we're holding on to, a lot of trauma, PTSD, is that we can't forget bad things that happened to us. Instead, we actually replay them over and over again. They continue to just make us hurt even more and more. Cannabis actually activates those receptors and helps us forget. So facilitating forgetting is actually a huge part of healing. So if we can forget, if we can move on, if we can reprocess trauma in a way that it no longer keeps us stuck or keeps us scared, we can move forward and truly have spiritual, emotional, and physical healing. And so I think that cannabis is really this amazing tool. And I really prefer that people, even if they're just, they consider them medical patients, please explore the psychoactivity of cannabis, because you can actually, with the right intention, right context, right support systems, for example, like cannabis circles, you know, if you talk about the things that are bothering you while you're under the influence, you can actually reprocess them, can see that you are strong, that you can move past some of this baggage. You can see that there are other people dealing with the same problems that you thought were taboo or wrong, or, you know, you couldn't vocalize. If you tell your stories of trauma and supportive networks while you're under the influence of cannabis, you can actually get tremendous healing. And I say this because I'm actually involved in a nonprofit called This Is Jane Project. I was actually an advisor on it because of my work in cannabis and mental health. And then I actually started going to the support groups myself because I was going through a really difficult time dealing with PTSD, not only from like a drug arrest that I experienced in Los Angeles, but also a very, very difficult divorce. And so it was interesting. It was like, there's the scientist part where you're like, this would be good for people to do. And then you actually go through it yourself. Like I was saying, every scientist should do the drugs. I was like, I'm going to get high with a bunch of women. Like that's not something I normally do. Like I take cannabis very medically. And I was like, I'm going to get high with a bunch of women I don't know and tell them like my darkest secrets. We'll see how this goes. And it was actually the most healing experience of my life. I found it to be more healing than say therapy. And so when we hear in the news, things like MDMA assisted therapy or psychedelic assisted therapy, really cannabis is a psychedelic, depending on how you use it, right? So here we are trying to be in the psychoactive range, and we're using cannabis to help us bring up those memories and then let them go, like literally drop off that baggage, and also connect with other people that are sharing similar stories. And so I fully found as a scientist that there's science behind this. There's anecdotal evidence, and there's also that personal evidence. And I think that sometimes that's the most compelling. When you've gone through it yourself, you really, really understand the power of this plant to do something that's very unique. I mean, most of us women, one, we can't afford all the therapy we need. Like seriously, women have been through so much trauma, right? We're raped. We're not paid enough at work. Like we deal with so much crap. Like it's not even funny. Like women have so much trauma. We have trauma that we've brought on from intergenerational trauma. So like the stuff that our moms had to deal with, stuff our grandmas had to deal with, like that stuff's in our DNA.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like listening to you, which I could do forever, your dash of science, spirituality, mm-hmm. psychedelics, sex, I'm so interested to know what your philosophy is for the way that you live your life, given that you have all of these really unique vantage points.
Goodness, you know, it's sort of funny because I was always a curious kid. And that's how you get into science, right? You want answers for all your questions. And it's sort of funny because this has been the one thing where I feel like every question I have just leads to more questions. But, you know, it was funny because cannabis actually helped me realize that I don't need to have all the answers, right? It's like, it's sort of funny. It's like when you're a scientist, like that's the goal, like literally just like knowledge accumulation. Like I'm going to learn everything as fast as possible before other people learn about it so I can publish more and like be more successful and all these things. Cannabis really just taught me the value of just existing, just being, the value that I have without any accomplishments, which was actually really humbling for me. So my perspective really is to not worry about moving forward so much and to just sometimes just enjoy the present moment and to slow down. And I think that for some people, cannabis is really a tool to help them enjoy the present moment, to not be anxious, to not be worrying about the past, to not be worrying about the future, but to just enjoy the present moment and enjoy the people you're with. and to connect. And I think that for me, that emotional connection, to remember every day is not about, you know, trophies or wins. It's really about the people you're with. And I've really loved the time that I've had since using cannabis. I've been a lot less anxious. I've been a lot more social. I mean, I almost was like autism spectrum, you know, it was like a nerdy scientist that hung out with rats all day. I wasn't like the coolest person at the party, you know, be like, Michelle's a little weird. Like literally I'd have people tell me, they're like, the friend you brought to the party, that Michelle girl, she's weird. And so it's just funny because people don't, like, people that met me now would have never realized that I was that awkward, weird person maybe 10 years ago. But I think cannabis really pulled me out of my shell and just made me appreciate the more human side of the world. It's sort of funny. It's like listening to myself, but I was so weird like 10 years ago. It's really funny. Like cannabis helped me so much.
Well, don't lose the weirdness.
Okay. I'm a little weird. I mean, you heard, I still talk about mouse sex. Okay.
Well, if you, speaking of, you know, friends, if you come to Toronto, please let me know so that I can have dinner with you and we can talk about mouse sex.
Oh my goodness. Well, I just wanted to give a little shout out too. So like, I know so many amazing people working in this space, but if you haven't heard of a website called Drugs Over Dinner, there's literally like homework assignments. Like you could tell, like basically the idea, and it was like Gabor Mate and like a whole bunch of other people came together with these ideas. But basically it was like, invite like say 12 people over for dinner, and like the topic is like, hey, we're going to talk about MDMA, or we're going to talk about, you know, should drugs be legal, like whatever it is. And like you give people either paper to read or video to read or whatever. They have the assignments like on there you can pick, but you're like basically to like use dinner as a vehicle to spark social change or to change people's perspective. Very similar to how like our perspectives about cannabis are so much different now than 10 years ago. If I was talking about cannabis legalization at the dinner table like 10 years ago, people would have looked at me funny. You know, it's like now it's like, hey, let's talk about mushrooms. Okay. Like, you know, that dinner would be filled in 10 minutes, you know? So Drugs Over Dinner is actually really fun. And just, I think it really interesting way to get that, spark that fun conversation at the dinner. So if you guys don't know about it, check it out.
I've written it down and we will definitely put this in the show description. Okay. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. This was wonderful. And where can people find you online if they want to be able to hunt you down and read your work?
Okay. Well, if you want to stalk my fabulous drug taking in life, just kidding. I am on several platforms, including Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, who knows where I am, but it's Dr. Michelle Ross. I'll spell that out for you. DrMichelleRoss. And also drmichelleross.com. And if you're wondering, I don't have two L's in my name, and that's because I come from Jersey. So you can thank my parents for that, but I'm a single L Michelle. So
I'm a double L Nicole. So I took that extra L. It's in a good place.
Okay.
Thanks for being with us on this Mango Jewel set to detonate. Next week, we're talking to an addict turned entrepreneur about why she chose to become a self-proclaimed stoner. Until then, follow us on Twitter at TDopist or Instagram at TheDopist. You can find me at Nicole Double L. And don't forget, puff puff pass this podcast to your friendly neighborhood barista.
This podcast was brought to you by the Cannabis Media Collective. The media contributors within the Cannabis Media Collective do our very best to remain as accurate as possible, but take no responsibility for any inaccurate details or facts. If a story interests you, we're glad to have brought it to your attention, but please take the time to research the details for yourself.